It tends to cause agitation and restlessness. And that's when it's important to have a concentration factor to balance the energy. And so to develop the concentration factor in that case, maybe really push the calm, kind of feel the calm, let the breath soothe you, kind of hang with the breath, in and out, letting kind of be focused on just on the breath, nothing else can help the mind calm down enough. And then the discernment factor, sometimes called the wisdom factor. And this is where we use our intelligence in the service of greater mindfulness and greater concentration, greater stillness. It's very easy for people to use their discernment, to use their analytical intelligence of the mind, to get lost in the world of thought and thinking and reflecting and analyzing and guessing and this and that. And that's not the function of discernment. So you want to be very discerning how you use discernment. If discerning is causing you to get more agitated, more distant from your experience, then let go of it. But there's a way of learning how to use your intelligence to help you get more and more focused, more concentrated, more here. Just like a bicycle rider is using discernment all the time, but the discernment doesn't make the mind agitated. It's kind of almost natural, second nature to ride a bike. So in the same way, after a while, it becomes second nature in meditation to use our ability to discern what's going on, to know what kind of subtle course corrections we need to make. What do we need to do in order to really wake up, become freer, be more concentrated, more still? The discernment factor also tells us that if we get too preoccupied with tracking the five faculties, we get in trouble. And that you just tie yourself in knots and you're kind of busy tracking something, you know. So it's not supposed to be a big deal, the five faculties. But it is something to be attentive, kind of keep in the back of your mind. This is partly what we're tracking a little bit, kind of noticing this. And sometimes it becomes very important to notice some imbalance or some lack of one of these. And sometimes they're operating quite, you know, naturally or on their own. You have to give them a lot of thought. But you don't want to get tied up, you know, hearing this kind of teaching, you want to be very relaxed about it so you don't get caught up in it. So what was it like to do that guided meditation? Were any of you able to kind of evoke or find or touch into some of those qualities in yourself? Were they recognizable qualities? Sorry?
I did it once when I did a very long meditation. Yeah. I just went beyond it. I'd rather sit than worry about the pain. But this was the first time that it really, really softened.
Really softened. And what was it that helped that particularly? So someone else, please, anybody, yes.
I know that the first part, we're focusing kind of on consciousness and noticing that and kind of re-experiencing, particularly noticing where in the body I felt confident. That was, I really felt confident that as I kind of explored the body connection, I think, so that was really helpful. I had to keep bringing my book back, but that was very.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'm not sure if it was my perception or seeing me spend a large part of the time.
It's the first. When these are taught sequentially, that's the foundation for the others. Great. So then if you have least trouble with it, it becomes a strength that you can tap into and utilize and help you with the others.
It kind of came be, also became a sense of satisfaction or accomplishment when you could kind of tap into that.
So a sense of satisfaction and
accomplishment. A sense of satisfaction to kind of tap into this confidence.
Uh-huh. Did you guys have some sense that as you tapped into confidence, there was more effort or energy available to practice?
Did you just kind of drive more energy?
Drive more energy?
Did you have more enthusiasm?
Uh-huh. So enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. And then if you have more energy, was it a little bit easier to be mindful? Did somebody find that? Or no? No way. It's so hard to be mindful no matter what. It's very hard to come in from, you know, a busy day perhaps and expect to kind of go right, you know, make this easy, what I'm asking you to do tonight. But I was hoping that a more evocative approach to teaching these five qualities would somehow let you understand what they are better than just kind of, you know, teaching them in a talk. So anything else you'd like to say about that exercise? So she's concerned that sometimes in the past I've called concentration a more of a unification process, and this evening it's more focused on being calm and stable. But they all work together. The more unified a person is, the less we're fragmented, the calmer we become. The more fragmented we are, the more agitated we are. Yes?
One thing I find occurring more and more for me with meditating daily, and it came up during this last exercise, is the sense that all these innumerable different experiences and feelings are all coexisting. It's not that I'm feeling one way or just another, but that something has to be there to be experienced, but that there's this choice as to where I put the attention.
Yes.
And that it may not take much cue for me to be aware, oh, put the attention there, on that one, or on this one. It's not there to find, but there is this sense of both participating and surrender at the same time.
Uh-huh, yeah. There is. Is there a question or
you would like? No.
And there is a lot of things happening in the present, and we put a lot of emphasis on the breath, as I keep saying, but that we're also ready to leave the breath if something else is more compelling and more pronounced. Something else really feels like it needs acknowledgement. And then the quality of how we connect to something is really important. So if a lot of things are going on, you don't want to just be kind of casual about it all, kind of aware of that. Whether you really want to feel a kind of a clear, full acknowledgement. This is what's happening now. And the fact that you're not acknowledging other things at that time, that's the way it is. You know. So they'll get their time. And so there is. And then once we're fully present for something, there is also surrender. Kind of acceptance, this is what's happening, and it has its own life, and I'm going to get out of the way and just allow myself to be present for it. So there's both a participation and a surrendering, both the active side and receptive side happening at the same time. Sometimes meditation, people focus more on the receptive side. Sometimes they focus more on the active side of meditation. For people that have busy lives or Americans who are so, you know, focused on doing, often meditation teachers will emphasize the receptive qualities in meditation. But that can be overdone. When the meditation is going really well and really strong, we're neither receptive nor active. It's neither a participatory what was the other word? Participatory or that you used?
Surrender.
Surrender, yeah, it's neither. Yes?
Receptive.
Sometimes meditation practice is about just receiving what's going on without doing anything. Just relaxing, letting go, letting things come to awareness, let the breath come on its own to you. And just relaxing and letting things come and being very accepting. Other times, there's a much more active approach. I'm not going to let the mind wander. I'm going to hold on to the breath. I'm going to focus. I'm going to do this. I'm not going to let anything distract me. I'm going to really look at see what's going on here. I'm going to go bring myself to really be present for this experience of knee aches. I'm going to really kind of go there and really penetrate that ache and really understand and see it. It's more active as opposed to just more receptive. And part of the art of meditation is to negotiate which is appropriate at different times. For people who are stressed, it's usually better to be receptive. Yes?
I think I have the five understood, but I think I have an adequate understanding of the separation between mindfulness and concentration.
Okay, good.
Because they overlap strongly. Could you shine some light on differentiates?
It's probably best not to make a too strong separation between them, because you can't really practice concentration without some degree of mindfulness, and you can't practice mindfulness without some degree of concentration. So they go together as a team. But mindfulness is more the capacity of the mind to know and understand what's happening in the present moment. Concentration is more the capacity to fixate on what's one aspect of the present moment and have the mind not really waver, just really penetrate and be present for this one thing. So I'm aware of all these people in this room here. I'm aware of you. And so there's awareness of you, but also I'm talking to you, so there's also a concentration on you that's happening. And I'm still aware of the people around me, but I'm not concentrating on anybody else. I'm concentrating on you. By itself, concentration practice is a practice that excludes a lot of things from awareness. And so we can just, in favor of just focusing on one single thing, like the breath or a mantra or a visualization or, something, just one thing. And everything else drops away. Exclude everything from awareness. Mindfulness by itself is an inclusion practice. You don't exclude anything. So it's willing to be open to everything and include everything, just know what's going on. With pure concentration practice, there tends not to be a lot of knowing, understanding what's going on. You just focus, like if you're focusing on a mantra, you get very concentrated, but there's not much understanding, just this words you're saying. If you're focusing on the breath, there might be very little understanding about even what's going on with the breath. You just kind of the point is to keep the mind kind of locked on. So those are some of the differences between concentration and mindfulness.
Where's focus help a lot? Focus versus mindfulness.
Actually, I was going to ask the same question, just in my own practice, before I engage in a social sphere or a public sphere. I do like concentration practice, kind of calm myself down before I
right.
Into craziness.
Right.
And then I don't know if it interferes with the mindfulness or where there are moments when I feel like I'm dealing with a lot of people, but then I don't know what that quality is, but it's like it's receptive or where it's like, okay, I don't know what quality it is, or I feel like that's something that I need to develop more, but I can't really quite pinpoint it. What do you think?
Let me certainly, if a person is mostly focusing on developing concentration or developing a calm, there's not much wisdom or understanding in calm. And so there is a nice state that people can get into and people can get attached to it, but it doesn't really help us understand how wisely to negotiate life so well. Mindfulness practice is helping us with the skills of both understanding what's going on, but also learning how to be present for things in a wise way. If you're just focusing on a candle flame, concentrating on, you know, fixating on a candle flame, you're not going to understand much about how to have a conversation. So if you get concentrated, if you do concentration practice only, and you can get very blissful, then you leave here at 5 o'clock and go out in 101 in rush hour traffic, you haven't learned anything about how to be present for anger and frustration and impatience and, you know, all these other things. And so because you haven't learned how to be present for that and hold it in mindfulness, those things will tend to take over. So concentration practices can have a big flip side, kind of backfire on people. And I've known people who've sometimes done concentration meditations for years, and then they finally kind of let, you know, it's kind of like having a lid on some deep stuff in their psyche. They finally take a lid off and let kind of the stuff pop up, and all of this stuff they've been ignoring or denying or repressing. Concentration practice can be a repression practice. Mindfulness is supposed to be the opposite of that. And so mindfulness, learning the skills of mindfulness tends to teach us skills of how to engage in uncomfortable situations or pleasant situations in a wiser way. So that's why even though calm is an important part of mindfulness, it's supposed to exist in balance with these other four factors. Whereas when you do pure concentration practice, it can be overly, you know, the main thrust is concentration. The five faculties, kind of as a diagram, are kind of done with kind of like a pyramid or a triangle, and mindfulness is on the top because that's the most important one. And then just on either side, just below, is energy and concentration. Because those are pairs, and they get paired, and they get balanced. They balance each other out. And then at the base, it's confidence and discernment. And they also tend to exist in balance with each other. If you have too much faith or too much confidence and no discernment, then you get in trouble. But if you have too much discernment without any confidence, that can also get a person in trouble. You need to have both. The analogy that's used in the ancient texts is confidence and discernment work together like a man who's really big and strong but blind, and then a really small guy who has really sharp eyes. And so if the small guy goes in the shoulders of the big blind guy, then they can find their way together. But the short guy is lame. He can't walk, right? So discernment is like a lame man who can see. And confidence by itself is like a strong person who has no ability to see. And so you need to have both together. And so some people who use the word, sometimes the word confidence, and it's translated into English not as confidence, but as faith. And so then people like to say that faith needs to be balanced with wisdom. What I call discernment is often called wisdom. So faith and wisdom need to exist in balance. And then there's a danger if you have too much faith without the appropriate amount of balance to go with it. So other things. Anything else you'd like to talk about from this? Yes.
You may have kind of already addressed this, but you talked about how can be dangerous to ride a bicycle with your eyes closed. And so I kind of wondered, you know, what might experience be like that in meditation where you could crash your bike?
Crash your bike in meditation?
Or that what are the dangers, really, for me, that is like, it can be disorienting and frightening sometimes. And so how do you...
Meditation can be?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And so, how do I how much of that is just a story and how much of it is real. I don't know. I mean, that how much of their actual real nature that you can get into with meditation that you have to be mindful of, I guess.
It's pretty rare that people get into danger with meditation. Usually, the dangerous aspect of meditation is when there's some kind of psychological imbalance beforehand that someone brings with them into meditation. And then sometimes that imbalance can get exaggerated. And sometimes meditation is counterindicated. It's not actually useful for some people if there's this kind of psychological imbalance that gets triggered by the meditation practice. But if a person doesn't have any obvious psychological imbalance, if the person does, maybe they should talk to someone, a meditation teacher or a therapist, to kind of tailor-make the practice. But if a person doesn't have any, concentration practices of various kinds, a person can crash. Because you build up a lot of stillness, a lot of focus, a lot of concentration, and maybe you're not paying attention to things so well, and then suddenly this deep stuff can well up from inside and kind of suddenly take the person by surprise. Memories and feelings that haven't been attended to. But I think as long as a person is doing mindfulness practice and maintains the mindfulness itself is kind of like having eyes. So it's kind of like open eyes. So even though we keep our eyes closed physically, as long as you're developing mindfulness and focusing on the mindfulness, I've never heard of anybody who crashed. I've heard of people who've had some really interesting experiences. Sometimes, any kind of spiritual life is not a linear life going from bad to good linearly. It's kind of like goes in circles and spirals and up and down and two steps forward and 1 3/4 steps back and then sometimes it's 2 steps forwards and then it's 3 steps back and you have to kind of go over. It's not a linear process. But you have to have some wisdom, some understanding that that's how it is. And sometimes, the analogy I like to use for this is say that you're going up an elevator and to some really wonderful place on the top floor. However, the elevator stops at every floor and opens the door. And some floors are like, these entertainment centers, like Carnival. And you're not supposed to get off on those floors, but it's so alluring. You get off and you kind of get lost in Carnival for months and days. And so you have to know, not to get caught. But other floors we come to, no one's cleaned them in 30 years. And they're just really a mess and dirty. And the elevator refuses to go up any further until, maybe the elevator door opened and all this junk just crashed into the elevator and the doors don't close until you clean everything out, And you can't just push things away because it falls back in again. So you have to get out onto that floor and clean things up and organize things. And, the floor before was so beautiful. The floor before was, a floor of peace and serenity. And it was a great floor. And I got it made. Enlightenment's about to happen. You get back on the elevator and you go up and the next floor is just this mess. And you try to close the door and you try to go back to the floor before and you can't get there. And so you have to clean it up. So sometimes, it's a big surprise, some of the floors we come to. And so that doesn't mean you've crashed, just means you've come to the next floor. Yes. Yes.
As opposed to just being angry and not realizing that you're necessarily angry. It's hard to explain, but that's one thing I've noticed in meditation. Is I can take that little separation and the
So because of that, when there are difficult experiences that arise, when we get to a difficult floor, it can be easier to handle it. Because you have the wisdom and understanding that you don't have to be caught by it or identified with it. You're kind of a little bit the observer of it. Oh, look at this. Look at this. Fascinating. It's a chaotic floor. Wow, look at this. This is the floor of guilt. You know, boundless guilt. This is amazing. I had no idea there was so much guilt, you know, on this building. You know, as opposed to, oh no, who am I? I'm just awful. I hope no one notices. You know, it's a world of difference between saying, oh shoot, I'm angry again. That's, you know, that's terrible. I hope no one noticed. Versus, oh, look at this. This is anger. And so that's the second approach we're trying to do in mindfulness. Oh, look at this. And the first approach we're trying to, you know, was trying to learn not to do anymore. So let's try it a little bit. Again. If you'd like to stand for a few seconds, and then we'll sit down to meditate again. And do a short meditation. So one of the things to have confidence in is the value of being in the present moment, of being present. So taking a comfortable, alert posture, closing the eyes, and then taking those beginning deep breaths, relaxing as you exhale, as a way of remembering the value of being here in the present. This is where you are. You're going to be awake the best of your ability to what's happening in the present. Then when you're ready, you can gently bring the breath back to normal. And then use the breath as a place to develop and cultivate mindfulness and concentration. Cultivate your ability to be present in the present. So to apply ourselves with mindfulness, there has to be the effort. And in making the effort, it's a lot easier if there's confidence. And it's important that effort be relaxed, at ease, focused. So the mindfulness itself, the clear recognition of what's happening, is at ease, is relaxed, spacious, and focused. In order to be mindful in a good, thorough way, it helps to use our intelligence, our discernment, our understanding, our wisdom, to be wise of what's going on, to know not to take our experience personally, to use it to define who we are or self-image, to have the discernment or the wisdom simply observe and watch. Confidence, effort, mindfulness, concentration, and discernment. So there are two lists in Buddhism that have the same five faculties, say list of five. There's what we call the five faculties, and then there's what's called the five powers. And I understand the difference to be the five faculties are really capacities we have that haven't really been developed so thoroughly. And when these five get developed thoroughly and fully, they can become powers that we carry with us. So powers of confidence, powers of application of energy, powers of mindfulness, power of concentration, power of discernment. They're real powers, that strengths that we have. So as you develop your mindfulness practice, may it be supported by the other four faculties, and may all five of them become inner personal strengths. And so next time that you're going to do the equivalent of bike down to L.A., that you have this mindfulness practice well developed and becomes easy. So thank you.